This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoen. Every time there's a homicide, a family is murdered too. According to the FBI, more than 24,000 people were murdered nationwide in 1993, which means that many more thousand had to deal with the shock of the event, as well as law enforcement, the criminal justice system, the press, and the medical community. For while death is an everyday occurrence, murder is a public event, which makes bereavement for the family that much more difficult. Wanda Henry Jenkins' mother was murdered in 1972 on her way home from the hospital in Chicago where she worked as a nurse. After many years of upset and soul-searching, Henry Jenkins decided to help other families of murder victims. She is the founder and executive director of the Grief Assistance Program, which is housed at the Philadelphia Medical Examiner's Office. The organization assists families grieve their loss and helps them navigate the various systems and agencies that are involved with homicide. Like many who are in crisis after learning that a family member has been murdered, Wanda Henry Jenkins said that she and her family went through the motions of mourning their mother's death without feeling much relief.
I think we kind of all went into denial, not denial about her death. The death, we accepted. The murder, we used all the same words that other people use, passed on, died, and things like that. And we all kind of sat around like people do around death in that first week. And you just kind of laugh and joke and talk about what the person did and what they would or wouldn't expect you to do. Because my mother was a pretty clear, level-headed person who had prepared us for dying and for what to do when she died. So we knew what to do. And my father was around. We all knew what to do. And we did what we were supposed to do. But what was complicating it was the presence of the police, the news media. It was on TV so much. I mean, it was all day, every day for almost 3 weeks. Because she was a nurse at a major hospital, Northwestern Memorial, and she had just left work. So, you know, the police are the one who notified the hospital when they went to investigate. So it was just so much interference in the normal bereavement process. You don't get things done like normal. And when I say that, for instance, you couldn't just call the funeral director and say so-and-so died. Come and pick up the body or go to the hospital and pick up the body. You had to wait until the coroner, until the medical examiner called you and said, now you can come identify the body.
So there are all these external factors
external.
That really do impede then whatever kind of grieving.
Yeah, even
you
at the
do.
Hospital. Because number one, they took her in there and here's this nurse. The nurses can see this is a nurse with her name tag on, you know, Ms. Juanita Henry, you know, LPN. And they're freaked out. They really are. And they're trying to work on this dead woman because she's a nurse. And they imagine that they could have left home work and the same thing could happen. And what tends to happen is people become very distant at that point. They don't want to deal with it. And therefore, they're not very nice to the family. And when my father, he left, they called him at work. He left work because he worked midnight to 8 at Loyola University. He left work. He picked up my sister, went to the hospital. And when they walked in to ask about her, they said, the corpse is in the room.
Just like that.
He didn't even know she was dead. They did not know she was dead. And instead of saying, well, come over here, Mr. Henry and the daughter, and talk to them and let them know that she didn't make it, they just said, the corpse is in the room.
Her murder was never solved.
Never.
Does that mean there was a period in which the grief that you had for her death was also unsolved or unresolved?
Yeah, definitely unresolved, because it was like, you know, you have this hole in your heart and someone's saying heal, but you still have a hole in your heart. Nothing has been done to it. And so it was like a shadow, really, a shadow in the background that was always there, always there. You have a sadness and you don't know why you have a sadness, a pain and you don't know why you're hurting. And it just doesn't make sense. But you know one thing for certain, and that is that your lifestyle is changing, and not necessarily for the good.
Well, how did your lifestyle change, and how were you able even to pick up the pieces after her death?
Well, the first few years, I was so busy helping my father to raise my sisters and brothers, I didn't have a lot of opportunities to really think about it. I was very involved in the church and community, but what I didn't realize is that I'd stopped going out, I'd stopped dancing, I'd stopped playing volleyball, and I was gaining weight. And
you think all those things were connected with
her? Oh, I know they were
homicide.
Connected, because she came home at night and was murdered. And I remember working at night, 11 to 7, and when I would walk to work, you know, you always, you look behind yourself, constantly kind of vigilant, constantly vigilant about your environment, about the people around you, and things like that. And I always lived in a security building, you know, things that I felt, I guess subconsciously, I was safety connected, because when a parent is killed, what happens is that the child loses their source of protection. You know, it's different. So I did things like that.
So when did you begin your work dealing with other families who also had lost family members to murder?
Well, actually, I would say it began in college, in that when someone would lose someone to death, I would just reach out to them, you know, especially if they lost a mother or a father or someone like that. And I would, you know, I didn't try to compare our experiences. I simply said, hey, I'm here if you want to talk. And I began to write about it and began to deal with it. And then when I graduated, well, the last year of college, my last 6 months, it was a good thing I had a good GPA, because that's when I seriously mourned my mother's death. I had become sensitive enough and open enough to the pain to realize that the only way I was going to work through this was to work through it.
And how'd you do that?
I had to do it. I wrote those journals. I found someone that I could talk to about it. I cried. I acknowledged my pain. I trusted God enough to say, your shoulders are big enough to handle what I'm going through. And I didn't feel like, because I was a minister, I had to pretend that I was okay. I wasn't okay. At least my heart wasn't okay. And so I dealt with it. And I talked to a psychologist and a minister, and I worked through it.
Well, let me reintroduce you. And our guest is mm-hmm. Reverend Wanda Henry Jenkins. She's the founder and executive director of the Grief Assistance Program, which is headquartered at the Philadelphia Medical Examiner's Office. And we're talking about what happened to her back in 1972, having to deal with her mother's death. And that really gets us to the kind of work that you mm-hmm. do today. Your office is in the city morgue. Mm-hmm. Why did you choose that particular location?
Well, over the years, When I said I had worked through this grief, this is 1979 now, 7 years later, and I'm finally over that hurdle, realizing the peace has come and I'm okay. I really began to wonder, well, okay, what did I go through? Mm-hmm. Was there a process of what I went through? And was it unique? Did other people who experienced this loss have this? And I began to search out others, literally to search out and to research in libraries. And I found no books. No books, no literature, just pieces of a vision in a sense. And but I actually, in 1982, 10 years later, my husband said to me, there was a murder in the community up in Sharon Hill, and it was a woman whose daughter had been murdered. And he said, Wanda, why don't you go and talk to her? You could help her.
Literally meaning knock on the door.
Knock on the door.
Introduce yourself.
Introduce myself. And offer her my support.
Did you do that?
I didn't want to, but out of respect for him as the pastor of our church, I did. And I went, and she was so glad to see me. I just said to her, hi, I'm Reverend Wanda Jenkins. My husband is the pastor of the church. And I know your daughter was murdered a couple of weeks ago. And now that everybody's gone, I know it can be a little lonely. If you ever want to talk, I'm available. And she said, come in. And I said, well, let me share a story with you first so you can understand why I'm here. And I told her about my mother's death and the confusion around it and the undue suffering that you go through. And it was the first time she had met someone who was also a survivor.
I'm still stuck in this, I guess, situation at the morgue, because what you're seeing there mm-hmm. is people coming through, identifying a loved one, mm-hmm. identifying a dead body. They're there. You're there. What can you offer someone under those extreme circumstances?
Well, the same thing I offered her that day, my presence, my presence and my peace. There isn't anything else I can really give them. The first thing I give them is my presence. And when I say I give them my presence, being there is a real important thing. Being able to know that you're not alone, because the families who come together, it may be a lot of them when they come in. They're all suffering from the same loss and sorrow. And so they really can't help each other. So they need someone's presence who is not involved, who can ferret out the confusion and help them to understand what it is they're going through.
I know you can't generalize, but under those circumstances, what do people want? Do they want information? Do they want someone to hold their hand? Do they want someone to cry with them? Do they want somebody to figure out how to arrange a funeral?
Yes, all of the above. When families come there, what you have to know is that this is a very confusing time. This is the worst journey of their life. They have to come to the city morgue, and because someone they love has been murdered. And when they don't know what to expect. They just know that they're coming there to identify a body. And everybody's focus is on Quincy. They expect that they're going to walk in, they're going to pull out a drawer, and they're going to see their loved one. That's not the way it is. It's a computer. It's a computer-generated image of the person. It's a picture.
So they're shown a picture.
Right. They don't see a body. Number one, the body is evidence, so they can't touch it. So it's not like it used to be. The body's not brought to you. You go into a sterile room with a monitor, a desk, and three chairs, one behind and two in front. They want two people. You fill out the information for the death certificate. Then they show you a picture, and you verify that this is your loved one.
Do you think, and again, this might be hard to generalize, but do you think that people do want to see a body?
Yes.
That they want to see evidence that this person
in some
is
cases,
right there?
In some cases, they do want to see a body. And they'll ask, but they explain to them why they can't do this. Some families are insistent, and they will take them down and let them look through a window like that over there at the body, but they still cannot touch the body. They still cannot. And so it's really best that they just see the picture. In some situations, it's best. It depends on where you are in the United States. But here in Philadelphia, that's the way it's done. What we do is we go out to the family prior to that, and we let them know what's going to happen. You know, I say my name is Wanda Jenkins, or whoever in our staff does it. We tell them that an investigator will be up to see them momentarily, that they're going to go in this room, and if they have the social security number of the person, we let them know all the things that they need so they don't have to rumble through their purse or pockets trying to find information. So what we're really trying to do is reduce the stress associated with the experience so that it really frees the person up to mourn the loss. And we tell them that information, and then we let them know, when you're completed, we have some information for you that may be valuable, and we'll come and get you and take you in our office. And then at that point, we find out, we do our intake, and in the intake, we find out, does this person need insurance, or do they have insurance? And if they don't, we tell them about crime victim compensation at that point.
Well, we're going to take a very short break, and then we'll talk some more. And my guest on Fresh Air today is Reverend Wanda Henry Jenkins. She's the founder and executive director of the Grief Assistance Program, which is headquartered at the Philadelphia Medical Examiner's Office. And she is an authority on the bereavement process for families of murder victims. We'll be back after a very short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Reverend Wanda Henry Jenkins, and we're talking about her work with families who are coping with the aftermath of homicide. I'm thinking for a parent, and I guess this is talking about a child who has been murdered. I don't think there's any greater tragedy or any greater fear than thinking that the child that you borned has gotten murdered. And the sense of responsibility, the feeling that I must, it's my job as a parent to try to protect them from this world. Do parents ever recover from that?
Well, I must be honest with you and tell you that one of the things I don't support is grief competition, and that my grief is greater than your grief. If a parent loses a child, they feel guilty. Because they feel, I should have protected my child. I should have been there for them. That's their feeling of protection. If a child loses a parent to murder, if my parent can be murdered, then what happens to me? That's their level of protection. If a sibling has been murdered, if my sibling can get killed, I can get killed. Because that's me. For me, the way I feel is that murder is not, death is not something you get over. You work through it, and you learn to live with it. And I don't care whether you're a parent, a child, a sibling, a best friend, a fiance. If someone you love is murdered, every single emotion and feeling that comes into that situation is going to hit you. And the last thing that families or survivors of murder victims need to do is to polarize themselves apart from one another with my grief is greater than yours. No, my grief is my grief. That's all.
Have you ever worked with convicted murderers in prisons? So much of your focus is on the grieving process for the family. And I wonder whether you've ever taken that information or the experiences that you have gotten from other families and taken them inside the prison.
As a matter of fact, I have been invited to go with this group called VORP, Victims Offender Reconciliation Program, out to Greaterford to speak to some prisoners and to go as a surrogate victim. I took two other people with me. Because what I wanted to know is if this was done, would this in some way help people who had non-resolved murders to heal, to close that hole in their heart? That was what I wanted to know. Because I actually, that was one of the pieces that closed for me when a guy called me after a radio program I was on, who was a murderer. And for 6 months we talked before his release. And that was part, I know God just set it up so I could have that peace in my life. I never met the murderer of my mother, but I met this guy. And I would have never talked to him under other conditions except that he heard me on the radio and got the agency number and called me. And it was just a good experience for me. So at Greaterford, when I went to Greaterford, I was very clear that I was there to tell them what their crime had done. And so clear that one of the murderers there said to me, he says, well, you don't have any compassion for us. I said, no, I have compassion for you, but I want you to be clear. I want to clarify for you what your crime has done. I said, because one of the things I told him is I didn't believe in, commutation of sentences, pardons, and all of that kind of stuff. That if you earn your way out of prison, I would do nothing to stop you. But I would never help you get out if you were a murderer under any conditions. But that if you earned your way out and got out, that my only feeling was that when you came back into society, you should do everything to promote nonviolence.
You mentioned the fact that after doing a radio show, a murderer contacted you and you carried on a kind of a conversation for some 6 months, I guess, before he was released.
Right.
How did that actually heal you? How was it that through this man, you were able to put what happened to your mother into some kind of context, I guess, that you could live with more easily?
Well, I don't think I even realized, because at that point, that's when I was helping other families. But when he called and I realized where he was, I remember the first thing I thought is, why is this guy calling me? And as a Christian and as a very spiritual person, I never take anything for granted. And I just really felt, okay, God, you're doing this thing. So what is the purpose? I'm not going to walk away from this. I'm going to talk to this guy. So over the 6 months, we maybe talked once a month, about once or twice a month at the most. And we would talk maybe a half hour or so. But we would talk about how I felt about murderers, how he felt about what he had done. And what happened is that I began to see something, and that was that did all murderers run alike? That they really weren't. You couldn't just lump them like you couldn't lump all survivors. And I began to see his humanity.
That surprised you?
Yeah, sure it did. When I saw his humanity, I realized in a sense that I guess there, but for the grace of God, I could have been in his situation, lived his life, and done the same thing. And even if I had, I would want to be forgiven. And he told me one day, he said, Wanda, one of the things I want to tell you is that when I went in the store that day and I killed that man, I did not go in there to kill him. It happened. He said, and more than likely, that's how it was with your mother. It happened. And, you know, and I really felt like, in a sense, God was saying, it happened. And now you've got to move on from it. And when I realized that, you know, I said, well, I want to tell you that as a victim, that I forgive you for what you've done. But before I said that, he said, I want to apologize to you for what that murderer did. He said, because that was really me, you know. And I mean, he's in New Jersey. He wasn't in Chicago. He wasn't the murderer, but he represented the murderer for me. And in his apology, which I accepted and gave my forgiveness, it was just a piece of my life that was closed off, that I didn't even know needed to be closed off, but it was.
How do you remember your mother's birthdays or special events that happened in her life? And how do you help other families of murder victims remember the good stuff?
I call it celebration of life. Now, some people have what they call memorial services where they light candles. I don't want any part of that because I think that's nice, but it's like it's a memorial service. And a memorial service is a funeral. That's what it is. It's a funeral without the body present. Tears and all of that. And it's not a matter of me being in denial. I know the person is dead, but we're not made to hurt forever. So I celebrate like this now. I encourage people to do whatever it is that makes them feel good. Whatever it is that encourages them. I call it reconciliation. Where you reconcile it, but you want to take opportunities to remember the intangible gifts that you received from the person who is now dead. Murdered, but dead. And what I do is on her day of her death and the day of her birth, I tell my children historical things about their grandmother. So that they grow up knowing their grandmother, just the same way they know Abraham Lincoln or John Kennedy. And I guess I would say that the most intangible gift that my mother's given me and my father was their concern for the community and for other people. She was a nurse. She always cared for other people. And I think I'm carrying on her legacy.
Wanda Henry Jenkins is the founder and executive director of the Grief Assistance Program, which is headquartered at the Philadelphia Medical Examiner's Office. I'm Marty Moscowain, and this is Fresh Air.